how it goes. Don't you tell me the same things over again, 'cause I'm not gonna wait for you. I'm tired of hearing the same old line. Your crazy excuses are not worth a dime. I'm gonna go where I'm going, do what I do. I don't need your loving, I've found someone new. Now don't you tell me the same things over again, 'cause I'm not gonna wait for you. Don't you tell me the same things over again, 'cause I'm not gonna wait for you. You've broken each promise that you ever made. Our beautiful rainbow has started to fade. I've got a lump in my throat, a pain in my heart. The lies that you've told me have torn us apart. Now don't you tell me the same things over again, 'cause I'm not gonna wait for you no more. I'm not gonna wait for you.
Now to the editorial room of the Jurgen Journal and Walter Winchell.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America, and by shortwave overseas, let's go to...
Well, good morning, boys and girls. This is Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern Steakhouse and Filling Station. And, of course, that's right in front of Terrible Tommy's Weapons of Mass Destruction, used and reconditioned military equipment yard that's opened up now on April 1st. And we weren't trying to play a joke on anybody either. We got the tanks, we got the armor, we got the big guns, we got it all here. None of the small stuff. So if you're going to come down here and kick the tank tracks on our weapons of mass destruction equipment, bring your 18-wheeler down here. Make sure you pull it off to the side of the road or in the field so you don't block my neighbors. And then go in and get yourself all liquored up and then come on out with all your money and buy all that stuff you're going to need for the spring offensive is off and running, man, the spring offensive. Incidentally, that the song you heard was Arthur Godfrey. Most of you wolves won't remember Arthur Godfrey, but he was back in the late 40s, early 50s. And in fact, that recording was made in 53. Now, 53 was pretty important to me, or actually 52, because that's when we got our first television set. A 12-inch RCA television set, black and white. We drove about 50 miles to get it and hauled it back in the trunk of our car, sticking out. Of course, it was a cabinet model. It stuck way out, man. Yeah. And then I had to put up big, tall antennas here to get anything. Yeah, those were the days. And also, 52 is when I got my first amateur radio license. My novice license. See, I'm trying to remember. I don't remember right offhand my age, but it was pretty young. And that's when I started talking to people all over the world from converted. You're not going to believe this. Pig house. Yeah. Told my dad I wanted a special place to put my transmitters and all my equipment in. And my bedroom wasn't big enough. It was only about, 8 by 8, maybe 8 by 10. Well, anyhow, my dad said, okay, and he went up to his old buddy, Kenny Fawley, who had a farm up north of us about 2 miles, and he also was a auctioneer. Said, I need a building for my boy here for his damn radio equipment. Kenny said, okay, so we went out, and he found a hog house he wasn't using. It was about 8 foot wide and about 10 or 12 feet long. But it had a low ceiling, so I always had to bend my head to move around in it. But I brought it back, cleaned all the crap out of it, took wallboard, sawed it up, and put on the walls and put carpet on the floor and moved my desk in there and my ham radio transmitters, and away I went. And that was my, where you could almost all the time find me during those years. Yeah. So anyhow. Yeah, Arthur Godfrey was, he was like the Johnny, what the hell's his name? I can't even remember. He was a big one back then, back on the radio, and then he went to TV. And he made his fame by criticizing the products he was selling. Yeah, back then, I mean, you didn't never said anything negative about the product you're selling or make any jokes about it. He used to make jokes out of the products he was selling, even like Chesterfield cigarettes and stuff. And it got him publicity all over the country, all over the world. And that's the way he started out. The next little burb on there was Walter Winchell. The old timers all know Walter Winchell. He was transmitted all through World War II. In fact, I should have played the whole thing. It was a broadcast he made in 1945 talking about the progress of the war in Europe and so forth, and also in the South Pacific. And he always used to come on. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America and all the ships at sea. Let's go to press. Yeah. Boy, he was a big-time guy back then. I think he was a two, but I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure. Okay, let's get on with the show here. And I've got some pre-recorded stuff I'm going to run and also say a few words, too. So here we go. Oh, yeah. It's the 2nd of April, 2015, Thursday. Our P.O. Box is 401 Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where all you boys and girls are sending in your $20 donation for the monthly fee on the radio show. Six shows a week, 6 hours of me blabbing or running something on here, man. Okay, here we go. Well, I see that the FBI, famous but incompetent, has arrested two women who it says were planning to detonate an improvised explosive device in New York City. Well, that's a big town. Noel Valenzas and Asia Sadequi, good Irish women, 31, are in custody. The criminal complaint alleges that Valenzas repeated contact with members of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Sidiqui was allegedly close to Samar Khan, an AQAP leader and editor of Inspire magazine. Both women were inspired, prosecutors alleged, by AQAP, ISIS, and the Boston bombers. Like the Tsarnaevs, they allegedly planned to build bombs. Valenzas once pulled a knife from her bra and demonstrated how to stab someone to show the Sidiqui what she meant she would do if attacked. Well, of course, what's wrong with that? That's smart. I think all women should carry a knife in their bra. Especially our lone wolf ladies. Quote, why can't we be some real bad bitches, unquote, she said. Well, I have no problem with that. I assume these people are, two women are Latin in their background. So anyhow, it's, you know, you never know what any of this stuff is true. You know, the way people get set up all the time. And it's quite easy to set up with Homeland Security laws and so forth. You don't have to say much till they can pull you right into something. So you never know whether they had any possibility or real idea of bombing something or not. I can't fully believe anything coming off across the press anymore. Oh boy, now we're headed for a holy war for sure. The Pew Forum projects in a new report that Muslims will be as numerous as Christians worldwide by 2050, while the world's share of non-believers will shrink. Oh no. Atheists and agnostics will make up a larger share of the U.S. That's good. I like that. and other Western nations, but will lose out on their share of the global religious pie. No, you're not losing out if you lose your share of the religious pie. You might have a good, much better life. By 2050, Pew also estimates that practicing Jews will no longer be the U.S. second largest religious group. Whoa. Instead, that title will be claimed by a growing Muslim population, which will also make up 10% of Europe. Well, you go over there to the Middle East to kill them, and then you bring them over here, and the Christians don't like them, and it's so screwed up. If it's going to lead to the destruction and deterioration of the empire, that's all right. Worse is better for now. Boy, I thought this guy would never bite the dust. The Reverend Robert H. Schuller died Thursday morning after a 2-year battle with esophageal cancer, according to his daughter. Schuller founded the Crystal Cathedral. I've been in that place. Not to worship, I guarantee you. Crystal Cathedral Ministries in 1955. He made a fortune off that. He owned an entire island out in the Pacific with everything you can imagine on it, only to sever ties with it in 2010 over the negative and adversarial atmosphere that developed under another daughter's leadership. The Crystal Cathedral was subsequently sold to the Roman Catholic Diocese of Orange in 2012. And if you've ever been in Orange County, you've probably seen this magnificent piece of glass. And they shouldn't throw stones, I'll tell you that. He's gone. That old Robert Schuller, he used to be on television every Sunday, maybe some other days of the week too, I remember, in California. Yeah, he had a lot of sheep with him. He was 88 years old. But if you start pushing the Jesus stuff, you can live like he did. He lived in big fancy houses and limousines, that island down in the Pacific with everything any man would ever want. Yeah, just peddle the Jesus story. Get with baby Jesus. You can be rich. Well, I see this slimeball Harvey Weinstein got his tit in the ringer. The New York Daily News claims to have spoken to someone familiar with a police sting operation on Harvey Weinstein, you know, the one that makes all these movies, in which the movie mogul failed to deny allegations of sexual assault. The anonymous source said Ambria Badalana, an Italian model, had worked with the police to record a phone call from Weinstein in which he did not deny allegations that he groped her in his office. Groped. That's a terrible word. Groped. Think of a big bullfrog sitting out on a lily pad. Groped. Quote, he didn't deny doing what she said he did to her, unquote. The sources said, quote, the content of the phone call, there's no question about what he did, unquote. A spokesman for Weinstein insists that he has done nothing wrong. Well, of course, he's a Jew, you know. The Jews don't do anything wrong. They're the chosen people of the baby Jesus. No, the Papa, not the baby Jesus, the Papa. Well, probably the baby Jesus, too. Of course, on the other side of the fence in the press, they say that this gal has a history of suing powerful men. So, who knows what happened. Maybe he didn't grope her. Incidentally, if you want to get into this money-making business of Christianity, they got an ad on the internet here for the Christian National Church. And you can register and pay them your fee, and they'll send you out a certificate of ordination tomorrow. Yeah. Let's see, where does it tell how much you got to give them? I don't see that, but the less you see about how much you got to give them, the more you got to give them. become a Jesus hawker. And it don't take much brains, but you got to be a good an actor, a dancer, to dance around on the stage, and you got to be able to wiggle your legs like Elvis Presley used to do, because the old ladies sit up front and they like that. Well, the pig is squealing. From over in Israel, here's one of their spokesmen. They're saying that because the United States sort of turned and wants Israel to obey the law and quit trying to push the United States around, she's calling for the annex of Judea and Samaria. Now, they want to grab more land. Let's listen to what she's got to say just a minute here. Let me get that on here. Yeah. I'm talking. Yeah, there we go.
For Israel, the new government that's being formed now, to come out with an alternative policy. And the alternative policy that we have to put out is a policy of applying Israeli law and through it its sovereignty to Judea and Samaria. And so that's what my book discusses. And I think as the days pass, we see that my book originally came out in English a year ago. And it has changed in many ways the debate in the United States about the Palestinian conflict with Israel. And it's very important now that it's here in Israel and that we're having this discussion, because the question couldn't be more urgent. The government has got to put forward a new policy regarding the Palestinians. Two states failed. We all know it. We can't resurrect it, because it wasn't we that made it fail.
So people will say, so the two-state solution failed. But still, you don't have to go ahead and take it all. I mean, the world won't like this idea. Or am I wrong?
Well, the world doesn't like us now. I mean, what we're doing now is we're in a situation where all the things that they said are going to happen to us if we do X, Y, or Z are happening to us now, when we're saying, no, we support the establishment of a Palestinian state in Israel's heartland. And so we
have to
recognize where we are. We are facing a mass
pants on fire
from the Western world that threatens us. And we have to put forward something that we can stand behind and push forward in the face of this hostility. And I believe that it may seem radical, but actually this is a very pragmatic position to take. It's not easy, but it's doable.
Get off my show.
Bring both Israel and the Palestinians.
Get off my show.
Also, the quest for human rights amongst ourselves and amongst the Palestinians is going to
get out of here. That bitch. You know, when you listen to many Jews like this, It's so funny, because they see everything absolutely from their point of view, which is, in some ways, it's not bad, but they go overboard. They don't really own the land. It was given to them by the stupid British and the UN and Harry Truman and Joseph Stalin. They have no business even being in the Middle East, because most of these people are, they're not Semites. I'm looking at this gal on TV. She's no Semite. But yet they're calling the actual Semites anti-Semites. Yeah, it's a weird world, man. Boy, there's no joy in Israel or among the Jews. There's an increase of 71% in anti-Jew incidents in the Netherlands in 2014. 71%, that's a lot. Of course, that could mean anything from stepping on a Jew's toe to telling him he's full of shit. Anything like that is classed as an attack, an anti-Semitic attack. Compared to 2013, the Center for Information and Documentation on Israel, CIDI, a Dutch monitor, said on Wednesday, according to the organization's annual report, 100 anti-Semitic, anti-Jew incidents recorded in the Netherlands in 2013, compared to 171 in 2014. Oh boy, let's see what else they say here. The report found people who were recognizable as being Jewish, such as those wearing a kippah, yarmulke, were especially targeted by anti-Jews, which included verbal abuse and harassment on the street. Well, that's not beating and killing, you know. I imagine if I put a Klan robe on and walked down through the streets of Harlem, I'd get some verbal abuse too. Approximately half of the anti-Jew incidents took place during the Gaza war last summer. Well, anyhow, they're talking about people calling them names and maybe spitting on them or something like that, and they tried to kill me, man. They stepped on my toe. and I'm a God-chosen person. They shouldn't do that. Well, the vice president said something that I didn't hear on the radio. He said that Jews would be more, they'd be safer in Israel than in the United States. Yeah. Jews are a few days away from commemorating the great Aliyah that began in Egypt so many thousand years ago, which was a fake and a phony story altogether. The Passovers. Bunch of shit. Then Jews were slaves to the Pharaoh. They weren't. And today it seems to the material trappings of the West. They're slaves in the West. But as danger and anti-Judaism lurk around each corner, the lure of the Jewish homeland shines brighter. In this episode, we'll explore making Aliyah as a labor of love and not just something to be done out of fear. There you go. Well, Mark Kahane was right, the head of the JDL, when he was in the United States and before he was assassinated. You Jews better get out of the United States, because it's going to get hot here. Especially because the State Department's bringing more and more Muslims in the United States. So, I wonder if that causes anti-Jewism. Yeah. Let's see what Jim Hightower's got to say, that populist liberal out there. Yeah, let's listen to what he's got to say.
Well, the boom is back. Good times are here again, thanks to an economic boom generated by, of all things, bad times. Tens of millions of Americans have been knocked down and held down in recent years by the collapse of jobs and wages. This calamity has led to a second blow for millions of the same families, who now find themselves buried in overdue bills for credit card charges, student loans, and other consumer debt. But there's a bright silver lining in that dark financial cloud. Only, it's not for the indebted families, but for a booming breed of finance hucksters known as consumer debt buyers. Believe it or not, in the warped world of high finance, there's gold in them thar hills of bad debt. Such miners of human misery as Encore Capital Group buy bales of unpaid bills from banks and other lenders, paying pennies on the dollar. Then, they unleash packs of their hard-nosed, aggressive collectors on the families. If they still can't extract payment, the debt profiteers turn to their meanest dog, the courts. Debt firms routinely file thousands of lawsuits a day against financially devastated Americans. They know that most debtors can't understand the legal gibberish in the suits, can't afford a lawyer, and can't mount an effective defense against the corporate lawyers. So, some 95% of these lawsuits produce default judgments against hapless borrowers, meaning debt buyers can then confiscate the wages of borrowers or freeze their bank accounts. This is Jim Hightower saying, this boom in vulture capitalism is disgusting. But worse, it's subsidized by us taxpayers. We pay for that judicial system, the judges, courtrooms, and endless rounds of hearings. Predatory debt corporations have perverted our so-called justice system into their own subsidiary for squeezing profits out of destitute debtors.
Thanks, Jimmy. That was good. I like that. Well, here's an international incident. Near Durham, North Carolina, a noose found outside the main student center at Duke University thrust the campus into turmoil Wednesday, prompting an investigation, a student march, and a forum that drew hundreds to the steps of the Duke Chapel. That's a rope over a tree limb. One person put up that noose, but this is a multitude of people who got together and said, that's not the Duke we want. That's not the Duke we're here for. That's not the Duke we're here to create. We're here for race mixing. God damn it, get back on the job. Richard Broadhead said to a sea of people standing at the center of the campus late on Wednesday. Without race mixing, what have we got? Well, wouldn't even have a good basketball team. The gathering was the culmination of a tense day. The noose was discovered about 2 a.m. in the Bryan Center Plaza. Word spread quickly on social media as students posted photographs of the yellow rope dangling from a tree. Duke's police responded and the officials launched an investigation to hold the perpetrators accountable, and the FBI will be there soon. Yeah. Can't do that kind of stuff, man. How do we know that it was a noose, a real noose, and what it was put up there for? Oh, they wouldn't do that. And to emphasize the story and to get every nutball reading it, they've got an ugly, ugly nigger with the biggest liver lips I've ever seen, with a white girl with blonde hair hugging each other. Oh, they'd love that. That's good. Rub it in their faces. Rub it in their faces, baby. Hey, Whitey, there's a nice-looking chick you could have had. But you let a Negro, an ugly, ugly Negro. Now, why her brain would be so perverted as to see that as beauty, as handsome, is beyond me.
Russian and America took the opposing sides in the Civil War. The United States government backing the government that came to power illegally in February, about a year ago, in Kiev, and the Russians supporting the rebels in eastern Ukraine. And that proxy war has heated up rhetorically, militarily. Both sides, United States, NATO on one side, Russia, are aggressively redeploying and most mobilizing their conventional and nuclear weapons. As we talk, thousands of American and NATO soldiers are parading around Russia's borders, and Russia is moving its own forces closer to the Ukrainian and NATO borders. So that's what the situation is. Now remember that a month ago, a little more, in February, deeply alarmed by this, the Chancellor of Germany and the President of France, Merkel and Hollande, flew to Minsk and struck an agreement with the President of Russia, Putin, and the President of Ukraine for a ceasefire and a beginning of political talks to resolve, and I want to emphasize, the civil war inside Ukraine, because that's what's driving the U.S. A Russian proxy war. That's called Minsk II. And Minsk II has been under savage assault, I would say sabotage, by the factions in Kiev, Washington, and Brussels. They don't want an agreement. Now, whether they want, and I'm not sure about this, actually a military confrontation with Putin's Russia, I don't know. But everything they're doing suggests that they're ready for it. And as this has unfolded, and I'll end here, there has been almost no opposition in the United States. There has been a bit of a movement in the House, which if you're interested, I'll tell you about. But by and large, apart from broadcasts such as yours, those of us who oppose this American policy think it's unnecessary and reckless, cannot reach mainstream policymakers.
Well, I thought I'd let you have that late-breaking information right out of Russia radio. And that's what they're angling for. These crazy people in the Pentagon and in Europe and in Brussels, NATO, and all of them are pushing for war, moving all these troops up to the border of Russia, bringing tactical missiles up to the border of Russia. This is worse than Cuba. This is worse than the Cuban situation. Following is an editorial that I wrote back on July 2007, I believe. I used to write quite a number of editorials. I don't do it so much anymore. A wise man once said, "No cause is lost as long as one person is still fighting for it." Some would say that this is an overstatement. To me, perhaps it's an understatement, since I know each day of my life when I look into the mirror that I've done something to promote my cause. Perhaps it's not a great thing each day, but it was one more leaf that falls into the creek destined perhaps to end up collectively blocking a mighty stream. The beaver weighs about 30 to 50 pounds, as I recall. He goes about his dam building paying no attention to other beavers who are building their own dens. One stick at a time, and he slowly builds a large mound. As other beavers build their dens, and many times becomes a strong obstruction to the water flow of the whole river. It's been experienced that in some cases these collective obstructions become so well built that it takes dynamite to clear the river. It's all started with a few brave beavers working independently on their own project, not sitting around worrying about what the other beavers were doing, not asking why other beavers weren't doing anything. The beaver knows his job and he does it. How many times have we read stories of a small mouse or a rat chewing the wires and shutting down an elaborate set of machinery? Did the mouse summon all the mice in the area to join him? No, he just did what comes naturally to him and chewed the wire. In the animal world, choices are quite simple. Eat or die, kill or be killed. Humans have many good qualities, but in developing these higher qualities, we lose too much of our important animal instincts. The animal knows that to pause even for a few seconds too long will mean the difference between survival and being eaten. Man learned to excel in killing mode while he was climbing the ladder of the food chain. When he looked around at how he mastered all life on earth, perhaps he listened to the Jew God and sat down to rest on the seventh day. Perhaps during that day of rest is when the hucksters slipped in to sell man ideas that were totally against his own survival. Every Sunday, millions of white people dutifully travel to the nearest mind control center to be force-fed ideas that fly directly in the face of his own survival. He even allows his own history to be replaced by the history of a greasy, kinky-haired tribe of liars. There is very little affordable time to rest when you face a struggle to survive. Dr. Shockley once responded in private to my question, quote, "When did our race begin to go wrong?" unquote. He cocked his head and smiled, and then he said, "Shortly after Cro-Magnon." I used to think he was joking, but as years go by, I begin to believe in many ways it was a true statement. Perhaps one of the most important statements ever, for what has man really gained by all of this advanced civilization? And it's really advanced if we have lost our individual will to survive, replacing it with the desire to be comfortable and entertained at all costs. Overpopulation, disease, horrific weapons, wars everywhere, is that really what the goal should be? In Cro-Magnon times, any intrusion into his territory or breeding grounds meant either immediate bloodshed, and if the intruder did not flee, then death. What is the difference today? The white man has been snivelized beyond belief. Every instinct to survive is deemed evil, unlawful, or immoral. All three of these lies are concocted by governments and priests. Our race is driven mad like an Indian deprived of his hunting ground. Almost nothing we do is natural compared to the habits we have picked up. 30 to 40 million mestizos have invaded our territory. They've overrun our breeding grounds, and not a shot is fired. At least 20 million of these invaders are women, each averaging about 4 spiklet offsprings. Do the math. That will be 140 million in the next few years with absolutely no end in sight. That's not even factoring in the Asians, Indians, and the Negroes already here. Don't forget all those so-called legal invaders that crossed over decades ago. If there ever was a time or a condition that demanded ethnic cleansing, it is now. If there ever was a time that demanded a white Pol Pot, it is now. Our deadly enemy is any individual or entity that promotes universalism in any form, whether government, religious, social, or whatever. Whether it's your neighbor, your own family, or someone 1,000 miles away. That is why you must stand and fight where you are and not hundreds of miles away. At present, the fight must be one thread at a time, gradually tying down the mighty Gulliver. You may not be able to use the rope or the chain, but a million threads can also immobilize a giant. You are the thread if you do as much personally every day as you can for your own and race survival. Nothing is insignificant as long as it is an act. Look at people of the Middle East. Very little money, and most live in poverty, but collectively they are costing the beast trillions of dollars with no end in sight. For every citizen soldier in the Middle East that fights occupation, 1,000 more support his acts in various ways. Don't tell me ill-equipped, under-financed people cannot win. Look at the Muslim insurgents. Look at the Vietnamese many years ago. Look at Rome over 2,000 years ago. It was the ill-clothed, ill-fed barbarians that brought Rome to its knees, along with Christianity. So quit sniveling and put your back to the wheel. Anything that's bad for our present masters is good for us. Anything good for our present masters is bad for us. And that was from 2007, an editorial by Terrible Tommy. Well, I see the white Ku Klux Klan has gotten in trouble with the black Ku Klux Klan. Three members of the Ku Klux Klan who had worked in the Florida state prisons were arrested on Thursday in an alleged plot to kill a black inmate upon his release, authorities said. The men were plotting to kill the inmate in retaliation for his getting into a fight with one of them, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi said in a statement. Two of the men currently work for the Florida Department of Corrections, and a third was a former employee, officials said. Officials said the defendants were members of the traditional American Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. They keep adding words to those titles. It's getting longer and longer. A white supremacist organization, and were each charged with conspiring to commit murder. They call him a white supremacist outfit, but every time they corner a Klansman nowadays and ask him if he's a racist, he says, "No, I'm not a racist. I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive." Officials said that the FBI was also involved in the case. Well, yes, of course. The famous but incompetent always have to get involved. Which will be prosecuted in the North Florida's Columbia County. And all of that just because some black beat up one of them? The arrests come as Florida's prison system is struggling with staffing and budget issues and is under fire for over inmate deaths and whistleblower accusations of violent culture. Well, the Florida prison system is a total sham and it's anti-humane. And since I know at least one person in the Florida system, it's unbelievable. And remember, the governor of that state should be in federal prison because before he became governor, he was in charge and owned a big group of hospitals, and he fraudulently conned and got himself millions of dollars off out of those hospitals. And then he goes and becomes governor. Now, you know who's voting for that guy? A Republican, Christian Republicans. They'll vote a guy like that into high office, but when it comes to taking care of the inmates in the prison, where they even have to buy their own shoes, their own clothing now, it's sad. And that's a much, much bigger crime than these three guys were prepared to commit or at least talked about. They probably were down at the bar talking about this guy. But if they were conspiring to kill a guy for just a fistfight, well, that is a... Man, you got to give up half the rest of your life for something like that. I don't think that's too bright. But I don't think probably too many of those Florida prison guards are too bright. Well, I see the Dutch Muslims over there in the Netherlands refuse to be educated on the Holocaust. Not all of the rise in anti-Judaism can be attributed to Muslims, pro-Palestinian far-left groups, and neo-Nazi far-right organizations can take credit for their own fair share. Well, so the Muslims are saying, "I don't want to learn about that damn Holocaust. No way. You know, this pro-Christian law here in Indiana is interesting. Some aspects of it smell a little bit since Mike Pence, the present governor, who's no peach, that's for sure, and a Republican, they're talking about him running for president 6 or 8 months ago, and he appears on the local radio stations all the time talking. So I think somebody, probably the Democrats or somebody, decided they didn't want him to run for president. So I think that this thing about the legislation for Christians to refuse service to homosexuals and things like that is, I think it's a false flag. I think they were out to get Pence out of the running for president. I see probably the Jews are upset about various racial groups using PayPal. And they're going to try to get us cut off from PayPal. I use PayPal, but we could just as easy have you pay in money orders, postal money orders, or grocery store money orders, or check, or cash, or whatever. So if they happen to do that in the future, just abruptly and sneakily, well, you'll have to communicate through the mail with cash, check, or money order. Yeah. But I don't think they're going to get away with it because several groups are using them and they're making money off us. This is a soundtrack from a new film called Beyond Treason. And, of course, they bring out about depleted uranium that I've been beating on everybody to talk about. The reason I walked out of the American Legion because they won't talk about it. The government won't talk about it, but depleted uranium poisoning is a very, very bad thing, and it's going to be much worse than Agent Orange as time goes on. Probably won't be able to play it all, but I'll play quite a bit of it for you, the soundtrack.
So, Allied air forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait. These attacks continue as I speak. Ground forces are not engaged. This conflict started August 2nd when the dictator of Iraq invaded a small and helpless neighbor.
Just a short time ago, you heard the president announce that coalition forces of Operation Desert Storm have begun a large-scale ground operation against Iraqi forces inside Kuwait. This phase of the combined air, land, and sea campaign has been carefully planned to force Iraq out of Kuwait with the minimum number of casualties to Allied forces.
Indeed, analysis and computer modeling indicate that chemical agents released by aerial bombing did not reach U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia. However, we have identified potential fallout concerns in southern Iraq, particularly at the rear area chemical weapons storage bunker and pit area at the location known as Al-Kamashia.
Our operations are designed to best protect the lives of all the coalition forces by targeting Saddam's vast military arsenal. Initial reports from General Schwarzkopf are that our operations are proceeding according to plan.
You use protective overgarments, boots, masks. I don't think you have seen a single battle scene from Desert Storm War where our troops were not in mock gear.
During our time over there, we started seeing individuals become ill with various symptoms ranging from rashes all over their bodies or chronic explosive diarrhea, heavy bleeding accompanied with that, excruciating headaches, the bones and the joints started aching, and there were night sweats, and things only became worse as time progressed.
There's enough paperwork right now to prove there is a Gulf War illness, and there's certain medicines that control it, and that's all they're doing right now is controlling it for a few.
Iraq did use chemical and biological munitions.
They punched us with launched all these different vaccines supposedly to protect us.
The threat of biological warfare is nothing new to the military, but the Persian Gulf War places...
Knowing that some of these had never been tested on humans,
we're all forced to roll up our sleeves and pull down our pants and get shots in the gluteus and in the tricep muscles of our arms.
Before the Gulf War, I could run all day and leap tall buildings at a single bound. After the Gulf War, I couldn't walk a mile.
I know for a fact I was exposed to chemical, biological, radioactive materials, experimental vaccines, experimental investigational drugs, oil well fires.
I am considered a disabled veteran. I've got a 40% disability from the United States Department of Veteran Affairs for combat injuries caused by depleted uranium and other exposures.
Boys and girls, that's audio is too weak. That's the way I'm getting it. I'll try to send you a download for it, okay? Well, a local black leader down in Georgia, a famous civil rights group, called for black families to defend themselves with force if necessary because nonviolence hasn't worked. President of the Georgia chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Reverend Samuel Mosteller, said black people need to protect themselves after the recent spate of police shootings of an unarmed black man. Well, I think they're going to take all their energy to protect themselves from other black people in their own neighborhoods. Quote, we're going to have to do something in our community to let the rest of America know that we are not going to be victimized by just anybody. No, they have to be our brothers and our cousins and husbands, he said at a rally Tuesday in Atlanta. Quote, whether it be the police or folks that decide that, oh, black people are thugs. Oh, black people are thugs and we need to control the black community. Well, you sure do. So I support your Second Amendment for that, because that's where most of your problems come from, your own people. Well, let's hear about the water in California a little bit. How about that? Now remember, I've been telling you about water for a long, long time. In fact, when I ran for Congress in Southern California, that was one of my main things I wanted to talk about, but I couldn't get any publicity through the newspapers, that the agribusiness and the big multimillionaire agribusiness farmers were wasting water like mad. I know it was. I went out and saw it in the Imperial Valley. And so I was promoting desalinization on the coast and water conservation with the agribusiness. But that all went by the wayside. Agribusiness, you know, there's not hardly any single family farms anymore at all. It's all big corporate agribusiness. And they used to pay off the state legislators because we tracked them. They'd come down to the Imperial Valley from Sacramento and pick up a suitcase full of money and go back. Willie Brown, even the black bastard from up there, he was a state senator, and he was the mayor of San Francisco. But every once in a while, they'd come down to the country club there in Imperial Valley and pick up a satchel of money. So this kind of stuff's been going on a long time, and since a lot of private interests got a lock on the water, what they have to do is raise the price of water. If they could raise the price of water, that would do a good thing, because these guys are getting all this free water and they're raking in billions of dollars in agribusiness. And now they're going to cry in their beer about it, you know. Whoa, we won't be able to do business. Baloney.
So what do you want to say? What's the point, I guess? I don't know. I read this stuff in California. And then look at some of the global weather phenomena that are going on. And it's just astonishing, astonishing. How much water is needed to take care of what California needs? Let me see here. I had the number here a second ago. It's an impossible to comprehend number. Trillions of gallons of water are needed. Now, I realize a gallon really doesn't mean anything, and trillions in that respect is probably a number that is immaterial. But it is just absolutely scary to me what is going to happen in California. The snowpack is lower than what it's ever been historically since they've been taking records. So Governor Jerry Brown is going to try to spend money on this. Now, this desalination plant down near San Diego, here it is, a staggering 11 trillion gallons are needed for California to recover from its emergency. 11 trillion. 11,000 billion. And California isn't the only state feeling this. As of late September, 30% of the lower 48 states faced at least a moderate drought, particularly in the Southwest. Texas is especially being hit hard. Well, so Governor Jerry Brown watches or issues his executive order that water usage has to decrease by 25%. You don't have to answer this, but just, do you really think that's going to make a difference? Is that going to make it rain? You can reduce it 50%. Is that going to make it rain? You can reduce it 100%. Everybody stop touching water. Is that going to make it rain? A couple days ago at Common Dreams, or Truth Out, and I just want to share a little bit of it for you. A guy wrote us, Brian Mensch. Here's what he writes. A friend of mine sent me an email recently after being alarmed by observing a neighbor's son, who is a city employee, the kid is, spraying the herbicide Roundup along the Jordan River Parkway in the center of Salt Lake City. She asked him what he was spraying, and he said, nothing dangerous, just Roundup. He wasn't wearing any protection of any kind. The very same day, the World Health Organization announced that they had concluded the active ingredient in Roundup, glyphosate, which, by the way, is the most widely sold agricultural and household herbicide in the world, billed as one of the most benign herbicides ever manufactured, the World Health Organization identifies it as a carcinogen. The World Health Organization elaborated that their biggest concern was for occupational exposure, but that the evidence was, their word, convincing. Now remember, these are scientists. They're not religious freaks. So they leave themselves a little wiggle room because science changes. Religious freakery is always the same. God said. The evidence was convincing that glyphosate caused cancer in lab rats and mice. Obviously, the young man spraying herbicides along the Jordan River has occupational exposure. But what about the rest of us? Now, this is where, God damn it, I swear to you, with the global climate change and the super typhoons and this, and the concentrated effort by these white male Christians to destroy anything and everything that's not white male and Christian, sometimes, I just want to head for the caves. Glyphosate residues, and you probably know this, you can't remove them by washing. Once it's on food products, it's there. And you can't break them down, the glyphosate, it can't be broken down by cooking. It's there. Now, the bulk of food in the United States now originates primarily from mass plantings of monocultures of so-called Roundup Ready crops, genetically engineered to withstand Roundup, which is repeatedly sprayed to exterminate weeds between the crop plants. Not surprisingly, glyphosate residue remains on the crops, which then enters the food chain of animals and humans. About 90% of the world's high-volume grains, 90% of the world's high-volume grains are now Roundup ready. Glyphosate residues remain in food for a year or more, even if the foods are frozen, dried, or processed. Eating strictly organic doesn't protect you. Several studies have shown that glyphosate is present in the air we breathe, the water we drink, and rain that falls from the sky. Essentially, no one on earth has been spared from this poison. A recent study of non-farm workers, urban dwellers in Germany, found glyphosate in the urine of every person tested. And at levels 5 to 20 times the legal limit for drinking water. In the U.S., the EPA has set a legally enforceable maximum contaminant level, that's the MCL, maximum contaminant level for glyphosate, of 700 micrograms per liter in drinking water, which is 7,000 times higher than the limit set in Europe. Not surprisingly, urine testing of U.S. residents showed levels 10 times higher than those of European residents. This reflects the pervasive use of Roundup in the United States compared to Europe. A 2012 study from Washington State University professor Charles Benbrook confirmed that the increased use of GMO crops had resulted in increased national use of glyphosate, contradicting the often stated justification for GMO crops that they would result in less pesticide use. These goddamn liars. I mean, it does not stop. Capitalism is going to cut your throat and laugh while you bleed. It's happening now. This is not, ooh, let's all get prepared. It's happening now. And then Brian goes on with this. Regulatory bodies worldwide seem to have taken Monsanto's word for it that glyphosate is not bioaccumulative. A senior Monsanto scientist, Dan Goldstein, even recently stated, quote, if ingested, glyphosate is excreted rapidly, does not accumulate in body fat or tissues, and does not undergo metabolism in humans. Rather, it is excreted unchanged in the urine. 1 year ago, the first ever testing for glyphosate in the breast milk of U.S. women proved Monsanto's claims to be propaganda. Polite way of saying goddamn filthy lies. Researchers found high levels in 3 out of the 10 samples tested, 760 to 1,600 times higher than the European Drinking Water Directive allows for individual herbicides. The shocking results prove that glyphosate does in fact bioaccumulate. Certainly the last thing a newborn should be ingesting is Roundup from its mother's milk. Even at levels barely measurable, Roundup has been shown to promote the proliferation of cancer cells. Pesticides like Roundup are called biocides, biologic poisons. They destroy living cells. Cells in the human body share many of the same biologic processes as the cells of weeds and insects, especially nerve cells. So are humans Roundup ready? Able to shrug off being exposed to this poison? The World Health Organization thinks not, mentioning the multiple studies that suggest its cancer-causing potential of this chemical. Even at levels barely measurable, as small as parts per trillion, Roundup has been shown to promote the proliferation of cancer cells. More pesticide exposure increases a person's risk of lymphoma. Even preconception exposure of parents to pesticides increases the risk of childhood brain tumors. You want to know the cause of autism? Do you? Do you really? Well, Malloy will go out way out here on the end of this branch and tell you categorically, it's this. This is the cause of autism and neuroblastomas and all sorts of childhood cancers and malformed fetuses. This stuff. I'm doing it again, Kathy. I'm sorry. I'm screaming and yelling and, I mean, son of a bitch, what? Why do we do nothing about a company, Monsanto, that is pumping a steady flood of poison into the entire environment to the extent that it turns up in pee in Germany, breast milk in the United States, excrement all over the goddamn world? And the real scientists at the World Health Organization keep studying this stuff and keep churning out the reports. This stuff causes cancer. And what are we doing about it? What are you and I doing about it? Chat here, sharing with you Brian Mensch rounding us up. Now, he also adds, cancer is far from the only concern about Roundup. The medical and toxicological literature examining the health consequences of pesticides reads like a horror show. These deadly chemicals have been shown to be strongly associated with higher rates of depression and suicide, impaired intellect, memory deficits, impaired psychomotor speed, executive functioning, acceleration of the cognitive decline of aging, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's. Jesus. Pregnant mothers exposed to more pesticides give birth to children with brain architectural anomalies. Jesus, what a way to put it. Brain architectural anomalies. What the hell does that conjure up in your mind? Including thinner cortexes. Children whose mothers had more pesticide exposure during pregnancy demonstrated clinically impaired brain development and scored significantly lower in memory and IQ tests in multiple studies at various ages in childhood. Children with higher levels of pyrethroid pesticide metabolites in their urine showed higher levels of behavioral disorders, and it just goes on and on and on. And the so-called scientists at Monsanto, who I hope they're being paid lots of money, because these sons of bitches are like, I don't know what to compare them to. I keep wanting to grab for the Nazi comparison, but Jesus Christ, that gets overworked. I don't know what to compare these scientists to, who will prostitute their entire education, unless they're got their degree at Christian universities, then it doesn't matter. But if they went to normal universities and got advanced degrees in chemistry or biology or biochemistry or neurophysiology or whatever it is, and then can get hired by a murderous corporation like Monsanto and state categorically, well, it's not... what's the term, Kathy? It's not bio-collective. It doesn't stay in your system. All that report you're reading about, it's in mother's milk, disregard that. All those reports about it's in urine of people who live in cities in Germany, disregard it. None of that is true. I'm a scientist. How can people do that? I understand how the non-scientifically educated filth that run Monsanto can do what they do. They don't care. doesn't make any difference how many kids are born with autism, how many born with brain tumors, how many are born with spina bifida. None of that matters to them. Hey, come on. We don't do that. We're just making real pretty round red tomatoes. Aren't they lovely? But the scientists who work at these murder organizations, how do they do it? How do the scientists do it? How do they get up in the morning? How do they look at themselves in the mirror? What do they do if they have a family? Do they look at their children or grandchildren and say, oh, son of a bitch, I hope you're not eating this garbage, this poison? Thank God your mom shops at Whole Foods. Won't matter. Oh, well. You know, we can sit here and yell and scream and thrash around and all night. Doesn't matter. All night, every night. Doesn't mean a thing. This hour has been sponsored.
Ever notice how a lot of things are known for quite some time, or at least ahead of time, and then all of a sudden all the media jump on it and it becomes a great big thing after it's almost too late? This is just to cause fear. I mean, there's hardly any real investigative reporting going on, except the social media and like that. But a lot of things can be fairly common knowledge for years, and then all of a sudden the press grab it, and away it goes. Also, Gaddafi's over in Gaddafi land. I told you before about Libya. For several years before the violent overthrow of Gaddafi, the weather had changed, and there was extreme drought, and they had used up all their grain, and there wasn't enough water to raise enough grain, and all of a sudden, in comes the overthrow of Gaddafi. Same thing happened in Syria with Assad. They had much drought in the area. And I've seen that happen in other areas. And then all of a sudden there's a big political upheaval. I wonder about California. They may be testing it. I don't know. Maybe there is something to weather control, to where they can make it even worse. Just a thought. Oh, one thing I came upon is, you know, our unequal sign. You know, I got a cool deal. Just carry a piece of friction tape or a roll of friction tape with you. And it's simple to tear off two pieces, put them parallel, then put another piece across it. You can make yourself a bumper sticker real fast that way. And then if you get out of the car and you want to get rid of it, you just rip it off. Three pieces of friction tape. And if you want a bigger sign, bigger non-equal sign, you get some Gorilla tape. And if you haven't seen this Gorilla tape, it's rugged as hell. It's great stuff. But it's about 3 inches wide. And you can make a big unequal sign. That's the cheap way out. You don't have to pay the printers and all those people to make them for you. That's about it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day. Freya's Day. Ladies' Day in the bunker. And I haven't gotten a music request yet, but if not, I'll dig one out of the vault myself. And they better fix all those potholes on Route 66, because I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of people coming back east in not too distant future.
left alone. I've always been an eagle, been a while since I have flown. My claws are sharp as ever, so my eagle eye. Something's gonna go to ground when the eagle flies. Lately I've heard rumors that the eagle may be lame. Just because I've been idle don't mean that I'm tame. You've jeopardized my freedom, my natural place to roost. I can fly when I have to. When you go to bed tonight, my feathers are all ruffled now. I'm ready for a fight. Just because I took a while to fly, I don't mean I don't care. When you feel the shadow crossing, eagles in the air. When you go to bed tonight, my feathers are all ruffled now. I'm ready for a fight. Just because I took a while to fly, I don't mean I don't care. When you feel the shadow crossing, the eagle's in the air. When you feel the shadow crossing, eagles in the air.